I'll go on to the first bend and see if it's all right before we begin to race, Amy heard him say as he shot away, looking like a young Russian in his fur-trimmed coat and cap. Joe heard Amy panting after her run, stamping her feet and blowing her fingers as she tried to put her skates on, but Joe never turned and went slowly zigzagging down the river, taking a bitter, unhappy sort of satisfaction in her sister's troubles. She had cherished her anger till it grew strong and took possession of her, as evil thoughts and feelings always do, unless cast out at once. As Larry turned the bend, he shouted back, "Keep near the shore! It isn't safe in the middle!" Joe heard, but Amy was just struggling to her feet and did not catch a word. Joe glanced over her shoulder, and the little demon she was harboring said in her ear, "No matter whether she heard it or not, let her take care of herself." Laurie had vanished round the bend. Joe was just at the turn, and Amy, far behind, striking out toward the smoother ice in the middle of the river. For a minute Joe stood still with a strange feeling at her heart. Then she resolved to go on. But something held and turned her round, just in time to see Amy throw up her hands and go down, with the sudden crash of rotten ice, the splash of water, and a cry that made Joe's heart stand still with fear. She tried to call Laurie, but her voice was gone. She tried to rush forward, but her feet seemed to have no strength in them. And for a second she could only stand motionless, staring with a terror-stricken face at the little blue hood above the black water. Something rushed swiftly by her, and Laurie's voice cried out, "Bring a rail! Quick! Quick!" How she did it, she never knew. But for the next few minutes she worked as if possessed, blindly obeying Laurie, who was quite self-possessed, and lying flat, held Amy up by his arm and hockey, till Joe dragged a rail from the fence, and together they got the child out, more frightened than hurt. "Now then! We must walk her home as fast as we can. Pile our things on her while I get off these confounded skates," cried Laurie, wrapping his coat round Amy and tugging away at the straps, which never seemed so intricate before. Shivering, dripping, and crying, they got Amy home. And after an exciting time of it, she fell asleep, rolled in blankets before a hot fire. During the bustle, Joe had scarcely spoken, but flown about looking pale and wild, with her things half off, her dress torn, and her hands cut and bruised by ice and rails and refractory buckles. When Amy was comfortably asleep, the house quiet, and Mrs. March sitting by the bed, she called Joe to her and began to bind up the hurt hands.
"Are you sure she is safe?" whispered Joe,
looking remorsefully at the golden head, which might have been swept away from her sight forever under the treacherous ice. "Quite safe, dear. She is not hurt, and won't even take cold, I think, you were so sensible in covering and getting her home quickly," replied her mother cheerfully.
"Laurie did it all. I only let her go, mother. If she should die, it would be my fault."
And Joe dropped down beside the bed in a passion of penitent tears, telling all that had happened, bitterly condemning her hardness of heart, and sobbing out her gratitude for being spared the heavy punishment which might have come upon her.
"It's my dreadful temper. I try to cure it. I think I have, and then it breaks out worse than ever. Oh, mother, what shall I do? What shall I do?" cried poor Joe in despair.
"Watch and pray, dear. Never get tired of trying, and never think it is impossible to conquer your fault," said Mrs. March, drawing the blousy head to her shoulder and kissing the wet cheeks so tenderly that Joe cried harder than ever.
"You don't know. You can't guess how bad it is. It seems as if I could do anything when I'm in a passion. I get so savage I could hurt anyone and enjoy it. I'm afraid I shall do something dreadful some day and spoil my life and make everybody hate me. Oh, mother, help me. Do help me."
"I will, my child, I will. Don't cry so bitterly. But remember this day and resolve with all your soul that you will never know another like it. Joe, dear, we all have our temptations, some far greater than yours, and it often takes us all our lives to conquer them. You think your temper is the worst in the world, but mine used to be just like it.
Yours, Mother? Why, you are never angry.
And for the moment Joe forgot remorse in surprise. I've been trying to cure it for 40 years, and have only succeeded in controlling it. I am angry nearly every day of my life, Joe, but I have learned not to show it, and I still hope to learn not to feel it, though it may take me another 40 years to do so. The patience and the humility of the face she loved so well was a better lesson to Joe than the wisest lecture, the sharpest reproof. She felt comforted at once by the sympathy and confidence given her. The knowledge that her mother had a fault like hers, and tried to mend it, made her own easier to bear, and strengthened her resolution to cure it, though 40 years seemed rather a long time to watch and pray to a girl of 15. Mother, are you angry when you fold your lips tight together and go out of the room sometimes, when Aunt March scolds or people worry you? Asked Jo, feeling nearer and dearer to her mother than ever before. Yes, I've learned to check the hasty words that rise to my lips, and when I feel that they mean to break out against my will, I just go away a minute and give myself a little shake for being so weak and wicked, answered Mrs. March with a sigh and a smile, as she smoothed and fastened up Joe's disheveled hair. How did you learn to keep still? That is what troubles me. For the sharp words fly out before I know what I'm about, and the more I say, the worse I get, till it's a pleasure to hurt people's feelings and say dreadful things. Tell me how you do it, Marmee dear. My good mother used to help me.
As you do us,
interrupted Joe, with a grateful kiss. But I lost her when I was a little older than you are, and for years had to struggle on alone, for I was too proud to confess my weakness to anyone else. I had a hard time, Joe, and shed a good many bitter tears over my failures, for in spite of my efforts I never seemed to get on. Then your father came, and I was so happy that I found it easy to be good. And by and by, when I had 4 little daughters round me and we were poor, then the old trouble began again, for I am not patient by nature, and it tried me very much to see my children wanting anything.
Poor mother! What helped you then?
Your father, Joe. He never loses patience, never doubts or complains, but always hopes and works and waits so cheerfully that one is ashamed to do otherwise before him. He helped and comforted me, and showed me that I must try to practice all the virtues I would have my little girls possess, for I was their example. It was easier to try for your sakes than for my own. A startled or surprised look from one of you when I spoke sharply rebuked me more than any words could have done. And the love, respect, and confidence of my children was the sweetest reward I could receive for my efforts to be the woman I would have them copy.
Oh, Mother, if I'm ever half as good as you, I shall be satisfied, cried Joe, much touched.
I hope you will be a great deal better, dear. But you must keep watch over your bosom enemy, as Father calls it, or it may sadden, if not spoil, your life. You have had a warning. Remember it, and try with heart and soul to master this quick temper, before it brings you greater sorrow and regret than you have known today.
I will try, Mother. I truly will. But you must help me, remind me, and keep me from flying out. I used to see Father sometimes put his finger on his lips and look at you with a very kind but sober face, and you always folded your lips tight or went away.
Was he reminding you, then? Asked Joe softly.
Yes.
I asked him to help me so, and he never forgot it, but saved me from many a sharp word by that little gesture and kind look.